You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in this week's episode, I'd like to talk about pornography, everybody's favorite pastime. Although technically not everybody's, I was looking up stats before I started the episode to see what the numbers are saying. And as you'd expect, I think it said something like 25% of British men between the ages of 18 and 30 watch it pretty much every day. And then as you get older, it gets increasingly less. And then, and I don't know if I believe this stat, it said that only 15% of British women watch pornography. And I don't know if it's because I'm warped by the things that I see on social media. So for example, when you listen to like sex positive content online, I guess maybe it creates the perception that more people are watching it than they actually are. But I do question the 15% stat. Although it did come from the UK Gov polling, so let's just go with the stat being legit. Now, this episode isn't going to be a high and mighty episode that focuses on whether sexual pleasure is a negative thing. I don't think it's a negative thing. I think it's a fantastic thing. But I don't know if pornography is the best medium for gaining that pleasure in the long term, or not even in the long term, to tell you the truth, even in the short term. And if you've spent any time online, delving into porn at any time in your life, you will know that the initial part when you first discover pornography, you're like, wow, this is good. But then after a while, there's a feeling that it doesn't quite measure up, in the sense that it leaves you feeling empty afterwards. And not only afterwards, but even during, it feels like you have to, like maybe at the beginning, you used to watch like two girls kissing and that would be like enough to get you off. Or it would be just like an innocent, regular, intimate encounter with no theatrics, no weird storyline, no weird dynamics going on. And that would be enough to get you off, and you'd probably get off pretty quickly. And then the longer you basically live in this online sexual world, the more you find that actually, even just finding a video that you like becomes increasingly difficult because you become so picky. You know, not because you've seen all the videos on there, because it's literally impossible because there are millions of videos on there, but it's almost as though your eyes have been desensitized to the little icon. So it's not good enough just to see two people naked anymore. You're like, yeah, you know, it's got to be more interesting. It's got to have an interesting dynamic or an interesting angle to it. And that's why you're scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And after a while, you're not just scrolling to find interesting or different content, because to be honest, most people probably have like a few scenarios they like, and then they delve into those scenarios, but just becoming increasingly extreme. So it's very unlikely that you're going to be somebody who really likes amateur porn and then you're going to randomly one day look up like granny porn. You know, usually people tend to have like a preference, and then they explore that silo of preference into increasingly more obscure and increasingly more, shall we say, questionable territories. And that's just not even because that person has bad intentions in real life, or because they've got like questionable moral character, or because they secretly fantasize about doing bad things. It's generally just a function of being on a social media platform. Actually, let me not even call it a social media platform, because there's no socializing taking place, and this is like dedicated porn sites usually. So usually it's just because you've seen similar things, and then they just have to be more extreme to keep your attention. So you're not going to keep watching two people having missionary sex over and over again. After a while, they need to add an extra something to spice things up for you. Otherwise, you literally feel like you've seen it a million times, because you have seen it a million times. The problem though is that maybe a month in, or year in, or a couple of years in, it's still like relatively stuff you could talk to your friends about. Maybe it's in an interesting location. Maybe it's interesting positions. Maybe it's interesting scenarios, like it's out in public, or there's a risk of getting caught. So there's a level of like exhibitionism that's making it novel, but it's still based on like the basic thing that you like. the thing is that the longer you're in there, it's not going to be stuff that you can mention out loud or talk to your friends about, because we all know there's an acceptable level of kink that you can talk about publicly. And beyond that, even in the context of no kink shaming and sex positivity, there's still a threshold of sort of acceptable things or sexual appetites that you can talk about in public. The problem, though, is that the algorithm doesn't know that. The algorithm bases what it recommends to you based on the last thing. And usually it actually makes it just a teeny tiny bit more worse each time you watch similar content. And I don't know if this is by design, I suspect it probably is, but it's rarely the case that you're going to watch, you know, some extreme dominatrix stuff, and then the next video that's going to be recommended to you is like a vanilla missionary sexual encounter in a bed in somebody's home, and it's all very, very respectful and all very safe. So already, even if you are a sex positive person who wants to destigmatize sex, because it really should be destigmatized, because literally everybody has sex and everybody wants pleasure, still though, at this stage, because of the way the algorithm works and because the way desensitization works, where you increasingly have to resort to more extreme content, even if you don't want it to, there's going to be a level of shame that is introduced to your viewing. And I'm going to talk about the impacts of that on your own psyche and on the interaction with other people sexually that has. But before then, I'd like to just run through all the various ways in which pornography affects you in the negative. The first category of things is that it's just inherently unrealistic. So even when you're watching pornography, and no matter, most people tend to watch, either they watch, they're into amateur or they're into polished. And if they're into polished, then usually the bodies are like perfect bodies. You know, everything is trimmed and shaved and waxed. There's no hair in sight. Everything is symmetrical. There's body makeup, so you don't see any stretch marks. You don't see any spots. You don't see any rashes. And they all tend to be pretty much in great shape. Even when you have like curvy women or thick women, you'll notice that they have like thick thighs, they'll have like really juicy butts, they'll have like big breasts, but strangely they'll have a flat stomach, which obviously that combination does not work or does not go together in real life. So it's just unrealistic in the bodies that you see all the time. And on top of that, what the people are doing as well is unrealistic, because one of the things I always notice is, first of all, the sounds. So you'll see the woman, let's say it's like a 20-minute clip. No, okay, nobody watches a 20-minute clip. Let's say it's like a 10-minute clip. So within the first minute, the woman is acting as though the guy has been engaging in foreplay for like half an hour, you know? So the sounds that she's making is disproportionate to the rate of progression that you would expect in an interaction, in any regular interaction. So not only is she moaning in a way that, you know, is unrealistic because it's much too soon and the guy has literally done no work. And one thing I always notice is that the woman will spend a long time performing oral sex, for example, or in other ways pleasuring the man, and then he will spend like 10 seconds at most. And then even though he's only spent like 10 seconds on her pleasure and on getting her ready, somehow when they start being intimate, she's like roaring to go. She's making these wild sounds, saying, you know, that she's enjoying what the guy is doing, even though, you know, in real life, actually that woman will be like dry as hell. And then from the man's perspective, and obviously this is in straight porn, one thing that's always creepy is that he doesn't make a sound. So she's like yelling down the house and she's saying all these things and she's egging him on, she's encouraging him, she's saying it's great. And then he's just like silently pounding, like no loose, no stray moan, no expression of how he likes it. You know, often his face is not even in the shot. So the woman is fully exposed. You'll see her whole body. You'll see her face. You'll see her literally from every angle. And then from the man's perspective, a lot of the time his face is not even in the shot. It'll just be his torso downwards. And then if he is in the shot, he's like the silent pounding machine that, you know, you can tell he's getting pleasure because obviously he always climaxes and they always show him climaxing, but there's no lead up to his climax often. There's no sounds that indicate that he's about to get there, and there's no expression or even just no expression or even just appreciation. And that's during and afterwards. And in the case where it's lesbian porn and it's women who are performing, you'll notice that it's just poor production overall. So it's just clear there's like no production manager on site. So one, it'll be two women and they'll have like really long nails. Like, you know, those long, like coffin-like, talon-like nails. And they're lesbian women. So obviously they should have short fingers if they're going to be using their fingers on each other. So that's unrealistic. Secondly, they always seem to get straight women who are not in the slightest bit bi-curious. So when they interact with the other woman, you can almost see like the disgust, because obviously they are actresses, so they're able to hide what they're feeling. But there's generally a sense that they're not enjoying being together, being intimate in that way, because the way that they go down on each other, for example, is like somebody licking something that is disgusting to them. So in their facial expression, in the way they're interacting with each other, it's just clear they're not into each other and they're probably just not into women. And that's evidenced by not just, you know, how they look doing it, but even just their nails on a basic level. And then when the sounds that they're making with each other, the sounds are unrealistic because they're making the same sounds that they would make if they were having sex with men, except that obviously the dynamics of having sex with women is much different. The pace is different, the things they're doing to each other are different, so you'd expect the sounds to be that they're making to be different. And then beyond the sounds, you'll often notice that they're looking into the camera. So they're looking into the camera, into the gaze, into the male gaze, and it feels like the male gaze because they're literally pulling the same faces, making the same sounds, have the same expressions as they do when they're performing sex with men. So they'll be looking into the camera as opposed to looking at each other. So the idea is that you're supposed to be a fly on the wall while people are engaging in a pleasurable activity. But if they're just looking at the screen and, or not the screen, if they're just looking at the camera and they're making these sounds that feels like the sounds are not for each other, it feels like the other person could not be there and they would still be making the same sounds. So inherently it feels cold, and it feels as though the women are being subjected to something they don't enjoy. And the reason why you know that it's probably made by men and it's probably made for the gaze of men is that even when it's two women being intimate, they also don't engage in foreplay. There's like no kissing, there's no lead up, there's no flirtation, there's no play. It goes straight to penetration as though that's like the ultimate goal and that's the only way that that sex can be legitimized. So across the board, whether it's same sex or straight sex, if somebody was like watching porn to learn how to have sex, they would honestly walk away so deluded because they would think they were performing something or doing something when they really weren't. Because it's not so much that it can teach you how to have a pleasurable experience and a reciprocal experience with another person. I think it mostly teaches you how to perform the feeling or performing, I guess. It's almost like teaching you how to fake having pleasure if you're the woman in the situation. And if you're a man in the situation who's trying to use porn to learn, then it's kind of just teaching you to use the woman's body and to have the expectation that while you're using her body and she's not getting any pleasure from that body, that she is still supposed to perform, that you are doing something for her. Either way, no matter how you slice and dice it, it doesn't make for a teaching of how to communicate what you want from somebody and also be able to read another person's body by their expressions, by what they're saying, and give them basically the same pleasure they're giving you. Now, outside just poor production and poor acting and poor casting choices, porn also has an impact on how you interact with your real-life sexual partners. Now, the first thing to say about this is that when you're watching pornography, and most of the pornography tends to be idealized bodies that we're watching, they tend to be like curvy women with like mysteriously flat stomach, or they tend to be just slim women with like, you know, perfect bodies, like flat stomachs, like high breasts, you know, body makeup so you don't see anything. the consequence is that when you end up, you know, interacting with somebody in real life, is that obviously that's not going to be the case. Real women have real women things. So you'll see stretch marks, for example. You'll see hairs where you weren't expecting hairs. Especially if the woman just, like, you know, doesn't get professionally groomed, shall we say. Like, if you don't go to, like, your waxer or to your... Do people shave you? No, it's just waxing. Then there are going to be places you're not going to reach. You're not going to reach your butt crack, for example. So in the wrong angles, you're going to see a whole lot more hair than you were expecting. Or in pornography, you'll notice that they always have, like, hairless butts. Obviously, in real life, most women and most men are not shaving their butts. Also, in terms of just body composition, in these videos, often they cast people with literally, like, no body fat. Everything's symmetrical, everything is high, everything is bouncy. Most women, especially after they've been through puberty and they've probably yo-yo dieted a few times, they're going to have stretch marks and their breasts are not going to be as high, probably. And they're probably going to have things like pimples or rashes or fupas, for example, where women carry their fat in different places that you wouldn't expect. And even just outside physically, how the women look in real life versus in porn land, even just things like actually getting down to being intimate with somebody, it's going to be a lot messier than they actually show when you're watching these videos. So for example, there's going to be sounds you might not expect. It's going to be slimier than you might not expect. Also, the liquids are going to look different. So somehow, magically, whenever you watch these shows, whenever you watch these videos, all fluids that you see tend to be clear and watery, basically. But in real life, that's not what things look like. And they're completely natural, but they're not the way that it looks like for most people. So the first time, you know, you see a liquid the wrong color, or you see stretch marks, or you see hair you didn't expect, or things come out that you didn't expect to come out, then you're going to get the ick from your partner because it's so far from what you're used to seeing, and it's so unperfect because obviously people aren't perfect and sex is not supposed to be perfect, it's supposed to be messy. The first time you see it, or when you interact with your partners in real life and you see those things, deep down, or even maybe not even that deep down, you're going to get the ick from your partner. That ick will not be because there's anything wrong with that person. They're probably a perfectly lovely person. It's just because you're not used to seeing what a real person looks like. And in your head, you have conflated the myth of the woman that's put in these videos with the reality of the woman that you see in real life. And when the woman doesn't measure up because in your eyes you've idealized the fake version or the mythical version, then of course you're going to be disappointed. And from that disappointment, your partner will be able to sense that you are not in the same mind frame than that they are. So if you're getting hot and steam with somebody and then they take their clothes off and then the hot and steaminess goes down even by like 3% or 1%, nothing has to be said. You can still try and sort of, like, you know, after the initial shock of, like, God forbid, seeing that she's not waxed fully and there's no, you know, she has hair on her body like a normal human being, a normal adult human being. After the initial shock, you'll try and recover and pretend as though you weren't initially shocked or disappointed, but she will have sensed that because, one, women, people are very perceptive, and also, like, energy is contagious. Like, people, most of the communication between people is nonverbal. That's why, for example, somebody can be sitting in a particular position and you can just tell from how they are that they are annoyed with you or irritated with you without them having to say anything. That's also the case when somebody finds you attractive. You can be in a room with somebody and literally sense the heat from them or sense that they want you. It's also the case when you feel as though that person has just been turned off by you, even if it's just for a second. So in the moment and afterwards, because of course she's going to replay the moment in her mind and try to think what she did wrong, even though she did nothing wrong, it's going to come between you because you're intimacy has already been tainted by that moment of disappointment. And people feel particularly vulnerable when they are exposed to you and they're in the nude and they're ready to be intimate with you, when they experience feelings of rejection from you or disappointment from you or ickiness from you. Then that has a very very deep effect on not only their self-esteem, but also just how they feel in their passion with you. It's going to be tainted and it's going to be diminished. And the thing about that disappointment and the interactions you will have with that person and other people you become intimate with is that it's actually kind of like Pavlov's conditioning, in that you are seeing all these videos and listening to the videos. And because there's a reward pathway being created, in that you're seeing something and then you're getting pleasure from it, and then you're repeating it over and over and over again through different videos, then you're basically conditioning yourself to see this content and then basically climax. And if you're watching the same kind of person, for example, the same select few kinds of people over and over again in particular situations and particular setups, then that's literally what the pathway you've created is. So in real life, if that pathway doesn't match perfectly, it's going to be very difficult for you to get to the same level of arousal that you would normally when you're watching stuff by yourself. Because again, your partner can't read your mind. And also, chances are you probably feel a little bit embarrassed to disclose the kinds of things that you watch. So the net effect is that you're going to be interacting with partners that never measure up to the things that you watch online. And also, you will feel trapped by the things, or the shame of the things that you get off to online, that you won't feel able to disclose what you need or what you want from your partner. And that's not even the worst part. The worst part is that because you've conditioned your mind, it actually takes a lot of, to be honest, I actually think that the detoxing process doesn't take that long, but you kind of have to be committed to the detoxing process for you to become resensitized to seeing different things and being able to get pleasure and be aroused from milder, normal women, basically. Until that detox happens, if it does happen, then it's going to be essentially out of your control what you find attractive, especially because what you find attractive has been ingrained in you from that pleasure pathway you're creating each time you're jerking off to stuff online. Now, the final impact on your real life partner is that the person kind of becomes an object to you. And I know we talk about objectification all the time, and we talk about the objectification of women specifically, but there's really no better example than in pornography, because the person is an object in so many respects. She's an object in this, sometimes even just watching the way that she's positioned, it's like an object. So she's in a very stiff position, sometimes very uncomfortable, stiff positions. And then the man is basically sort of like using her body to climax in a way that doesn't feel like she's a real life person that responds to stimuli and is able to assert her agency and assert her own desires. And one of the ways you can tell that the intention or the impact is that the woman has been objectified in many of these cases is that the sounds she makes, as I was talking about earlier, are almost disconnected to the thing that's being done to her. It's almost as though it's like one of those teddy bears that you press a button and they tell you something. They tell you like, I love you. But you press it and it tells you I love you. You press it, it tells you I love you. It doesn't matter how many times you press it, it says the same things. It doesn't matter if it's like soft pressure or hard pressure, it's saying the same things. And with these videos, sometimes what I feel like is that those women are like those teddy bears, in that no matter who the partner is in that scenario, in that scene, no matter whether he's actually being gentle or catering or nurturing to what she wants, she's going to make the same sounds, because ultimately she's performing for the male gaze, and the male gaze doesn't really require female participation or female pleasure to get off. In fact, in some cases, it's actually put off by women engaging in sex in a way that's beneficial to them or pleasurable to them. So she becomes a statue, essentially, a somewhat moving statue and a somewhat responsive statue, but a statue in the sense that she doesn't have independent desires that she asserts on that person, on her partner often. And sometimes the objectification is actually a lot more obvious as well, or intentional as well, in that there's lots of categories, for example, where the woman is designed to literally be an object. So she's supposed to be a sex doll, for example, or she's supposed to be a body part, or she's supposed to be an orifice to be used. So literally they make her into an object. And the problem with that, of course, is that real women aren't objects, and real women have their own desires and their own wants. And If the man or their partner is only used to dealing with objects that can't respond, or when they do respond, it's always in the affirmative, is always egging them on and is always encouraging them, then when the woman doesn't perform that affirmation and that egging on to a satisfactory level because maybe she's not enjoying it, then it's going to create in him a sense of insecurity. And when she starts asking for things to be changed, specifying what she'd actually like, specifying what she doesn't like, specifying that she's setting boundaries around the things that she wants to do and doesn't want to do, then of course, when you're used to only seeing women through the lens of these things that are just responsive to you and do exactly what you want or does exactly what the man in the scene wants, and you can almost sort of bypass their humanity because you never really need to talk with them, you never really need to check in with them, you never really need to ask them what they want, then if your partner finds it difficult to conform to that standard of being an object, then of course naturally it's going to either cause incompatibility in the sense that you probably can't pleasure her because you're not responsive to a real life person, or the only way in which you can be intimate is if she is willing to objectify herself. And that's ultimately a short string, because unless she explicitly gets pleasure from being objectified, and to be honest, some people do, if she doesn't explicitly get pleasure from that, then it's a short string that you're working with, because there will come a time when she'll get fed up and then she will stop wanting to be intimate with you. And you'll wonder why at the beginning she was so willing to engage with you and sort of fulfill your desires and be pliant. As time goes by, because she's not getting pleasure from it, then of course she doesn't want to continue to engage in intimacy with you. And then another thing about watching pornography is that there's kind of a reason why people watch it in secret. Most people tend to watch it alone. They tend to usually watch it on silent, or they'll have their headphones on, or they'll wait until the house is clear, or they'll wait until they're in a hotel by themselves. Or if they do tell their partners or their friends that they watch it, they'll probably underreport how much they really watch. If they tell them what they watch, they probably will underreport the kinds of things that they watch. And if ever, God forbid, anybody should see their search history or their porn history, they would probably be mortified, because it would reveal the kinds of things that they're watching. And this brings me to my point about internalized shame, in that because we're doing all these things in secret, we're consuming this content in secret, we're underplaying how much of it we watch, we're underplaying the kinds of things that we watch, all that is internalizing in our own psyche that it's a shameful thing. Because if we didn't believe it was a shameful thing, then we wouldn't be so secretive about it. We wouldn't be scared that people would see our search history. We wouldn't be scared that people would see the kinds of things that we watch. Because again, we don't hide the things that we believe are positive. Or we don't hide the things that we think are non-shameful. We hide the things that we believe are secretly shameful. And so, despite what you might say to yourself, even if you're somebody who is sex positive and believes in de-stigmatizing sex, the very nature of the way in which the pornography is consumed is in self-communicating to ourselves that it's a shameful, secretive, dirty thing that we engage with, and we basically have to keep it to ourselves lest our character be stained in some way. And so when you're engaging in any kind of behavior where that's the underlying feeling, then it's a self-perpetuating cycle. It's kind of like when you have feelings of shame around drinking. So some people drink and there's literally no shame attached to it because they drink in a way that doesn't feel like it's outside their control. You know, they don't set standards for themselves around their drinking patterns and then break them. So when they say, you know, I don't want to drink this week, they just don't drink. And when they say, you know, I'm going to take a few months off because maybe I've been overdoing it, or maybe I'm trying to be healthier, they just do it, and it's not an internal struggle. The person, though, who struggles with asserting boundaries around their drinking and sticking to their targets around drinking because they want to limit it, because they feel as though they might be losing control, then each time they set a standard or set a limit and they break that limit despite them not wanting to, then as time goes by, there creeps in a level of shame around their drinking. So you find that they might start underreporting the amount of drinking they do because they're feeling self-conscious and self-aware around their drinking, because they know internally that there's a battle going on that they're not quite winning. And when they look around, they see that other people have no issue in restraining their consumption, then it's amplifying that feeling of being out of control and being dysregulated around their drinking patterns, which again leads to further underplaying and underreporting of drinking habits. And I think it's exactly the same thing with pornography, in that it has that same sort of setting boundaries for yourself but breaking them, because again, there's such a strong pleasure pathway that's being created when you keep watching the stuff and you're stimulated by that stuff, you get pleasure from that stuff, and you rinse and repeat over and over again. It becomes a difficult habit to break because you're kind of conditioning your brain to responding to this content, and it's a pretty potent response that you're having. So because you're setting boundaries around the consumption of pornography, and then you're constantly breaking those boundaries, again, a level of shame starts to creep in when you realize that you might not be in control of how much pornography you're watching, and then also, more importantly, I would say, the kinds of content that you need to watch to get off on. And it kind of can feel like an addiction type thing, not in the same way that somebody would be addicted to cigarettes, for example, where their body is literally itching, they're like, I need to have a cigarette, or when somebody suffers from alcoholism and it's a physical compulsion. But I would say the similarities is in the sense that you're trying to recapture the initial high. So when you first start watching pornography, it really takes very little for you to be stimulated and for you to be satisfied. But as time goes by, as I talked about, you know, in the episode, is that you increasingly need to have you need to have bigger doses of stimulation to have the same effect that you had initially. And the thing is, it's essentially a high that you will never be able to capture, because the very nature of desensitization means that the more you consume, the more you become desensitized. So you're going to always need more and more and more and more extreme content for you to feel the same level of satisfaction or stimulation that you did initially or at the onset. So the shame comes from the junkie consumption of pornography, where you're watching increasingly more creepy and sinister and extreme pornography that you're too ashamed to kind of talk about or even really admit to yourself. But the shame also comes from, I think, the fact that you kind of know on some level that the women aren't enjoying the sex. And I think that's why when it's over, when you've climaxed, you come to your senses and you feel disgusted with yourself, because you know the woman's not enjoying herself. You can tell from her expression, there's literally no joy in that woman's eyes. The way that her body is stiff. The way the man is using her body is probably unconscionable. And you know that was a woman in real life, that she would not be having a good time, and you would be too uncomfortable yourself to continue with the situation when you know the person you're with is not having a good time. Or not just put it, maybe not having a good time is putting it too mildly. They're actively having a negative experience in that moment. Especially because presumably in real life, you actually have been in a room interacting intimately with somebody who is enjoying sex. And the way they sounds way different. The way they look is much different. The way they respond to you is much different. The way their body responds is much different. So because you know the real thing, then obviously you can recognize the opposite of those things. You can recognize the opposite of what somebody who is enjoying herself looks like and what her body feels like and the sounds that she makes. So when you're watching these videos, on some level, you kind of have to know that she's not having a good time, which is why that feeling of, I need to sort of shower afterwards sets in. And from the women's perspective as well, you know, women also descend into extreme content, and they probably watch different kinds of content. It's probably different forms of domination or objectification, because again, we tend to perform or try to relive in some way existing dynamics in our own lives. Sometimes it's opposite dynamics, but often it's actually very similar dynamics. So women are socialized to be submissive, and they're socialized to sort of think of a manly man as a man who is soft level dominant, in that he's assertive, he knows what he wants, he sets the pace, he takes the lead. And so when it comes down to expressing sexuality, often women as well will gravitate towards that kind of content. And while it might start off as relatively benign, in that maybe it's just somebody who's especially hunky that you're watching, but as time goes by, the content as well is going to become increasingly extreme. And if the subject matter in general is one that is, the theme is domination, then the content that the algorithm throws up for you is going to be content that borders on the torturous, essentially. So the shame is coming from, again, the descent into sort of decay, I guess you could say, in the porn world, but also from the fact that now this content that you're watching doesn't actually align with who you identify with in real life. So in real life, you identify with somebody who is in control of her pleasure, of her desire, who believes in equality between the sexes, who doesn't believe in the relationship between submission and sexuality, who maybe has feminist ideals or lives by feminist ideals. And so when you're watching content that sort of directly contradicts that, then it feels as though your real life persona is a persona, or that you're somehow disingenuous, or it feels as though you have latent or repressed feelings of misogyny within you, because those are what are coming out in the content that you're watching, essentially. The shame here is coming from the fact that you feel as though the real life version of you is more evolved, shall we say, than the private part of you. And then the final part of the shame that I'd like to talk about in the episode is also just the kinds of people you see on these platforms. So if you look it up, the high search terms are teen and barely legal content. So most men, or the majority of men, are looking at content where they have had to explicitly type in teen or barely legal. And so after they've consumed this content, they obviously have to reconcile what they like to watch and the things that they consume online with who they identify with in real life, because the majority of men, despite the fact that they consume this kind of content, would not identify as being people who are predator, and in fact are not predator in real life. But obviously in other scenarios, you tend to be what you do. So if you are somebody who's kind, you show kindness to the people around you. If you're somebody who's generous, you show generosity to somebody who's the people who are around you. If you're, you know, a defender of women's rights, then that is self-evident in the life around you as well. In this situation, however, there's obviously a schism between the things that you're watching, the things you're consuming, the things you're typing in, and then your real life persona. And because this is such an extreme thing, and a thing where if it ever got out, or somebody ever saw your history, or somebody saw your history and they spread that news to your colleagues or classmates or friends, the deep level of shame would probably be too much for most people to be able to continue to be in that environment with those same people. They probably have to change jobs or like change schools, because again, there's a label that comes with somebody who likes to watch barely legal porn. And so when you're indulging or engaging in that kind of stuff, then of course there's going to be a level of shame each time you jerk off. And you're going to feel compelled or feel a level of compulsion in the way that you consume that content, because again, that's the path, the pleasure pathway that you're creating by constantly watching pornography anyway. But on top of that, you're going to be engaging in pornography that is so far from who you ever want to be in real life, or identified as in real life, that of course inherently whenever you watch that content, there's going to be some level of shame that trickles in. With all that being said, you know, I still had to ask myself if it's possible to consume sex positive and ethically produced pornography. And I guess I would say yes and no. Yes, in the sense that there's obviously content online that is, for example, when it comes to lesbian porn, it's pornography that's been produced by women for women, and they basically make sure that everybody's paid, they have the consent to release the content, and the way the women are depicted is in a way that isn't dehumanizing, and it's a way that focuses on their mutual pleasure, and the people who engage in the pornography are engaging with it willingly. They haven't been coerced into doing it either by somebody or because of economic reasons. I think the problem though is that even these videos that are ethically produced, shall we say, and have the full consent of all adults involved, they're still usually on these platforms where the majority, the overwhelming majority of the content on there is not content that meets that profile. And the thing about these videos is because you can't identify the people, because usually the people are anonymous. They usually don't have their real names on there. They're not connected to their real identities, even if they have names on there. And actually, I was reading about how the average life cycle of a porn star's career, or of a female porn star's career, is 6 to 18 months. And that in itself, I think, speaks to the fact that they obviously are not enjoying producing that content, or were producing that content because they had to, or they were in a negative space in their life. Otherwise, if they were engaging with it because they wanted to and it was serving them and they were not exploited, then there's no reason why the average career span of a porn star would be 6 to 18 months. So I think even in the case where content is produced, quote unquote, ethically and morally, and you can, you know, do all the safety checks and making sure that it's all kosher, I still think in the wider context, these are only a drop in the ocean in terms of what the content is out there. And also, you ultimately will never know. Like, it's not as though at the end of the video, you know, they sign a declaration in front of you and they speak to the camera and say, I was, you know, if you want to check in with me and contact me to make sure that I really did consent to this, reach out to me. You will never really know. You will never know. You have to hope for the best, but assume the worst, because the majority of people on there are not there because they had a million amazing, fulfilling options that they could engage with. You know, they could have gone to school, they could have had a nice job that pays them well, but then they just chose this. Most people are there for economic reasons. They're there because they're economically coerced. They're there because they need the money quickly. And in many cases as well, they're there not of their own volition. So given that you can never really know who made the content and what headspace they were in, what their circumstances were at that time, whether they were really able to consent without any form of physical or economic coercion, then whenever you're watching that content, you're taking a massive risk, and actually odds are much more in favor that the content you're consuming was not produced ethically and was not, and the person 10 years from now will regret the content they created. All that being said, though, you know, there are still ways in which you can explore your own pleasure in a way that is responsible and in a way that isn't detrimental to your own self and doesn't prevent you from being able to interact with people in the real world. And one of those things that I personally am a fan of is even just when you read literature that is, it's technically called, what's it called? It's called smut. It's basically, it's called literotica. It's basically like you read stuff that is that are erotic stories, passionate stories. And I think it's much better, one, for your imagination, because you have to work harder to conjure up the images, and also because it's better paced, then it feels better. It isn't like an instant gratification in the sense that the video is over in 3 minutes. Like, some of these stories have, like, you know, chapters and go on for a very long time. So that's one option. Also, in the reading space, of course, there's like lots of novels, and women are a big fan of novels. I mean, they kind of follow the same kind of like tropes and storylines. It's probably like 3 story arcs in total. I know, that's probably like 7 story arcs. But still, you know, they're very enjoyable. And also, you're supporting people in real life, and you can trace who the author is. You know, they're getting the money. And also, they've had to work hard to create in your imagination something that you're going to delight in. Then the other option, of course, is to go out into the real world. Because when we turn to pornography, we're trying to address real life desires and real life needs. So we're often after desire, like feeling desire for somebody, feeling wanted by somebody else. We're after adventure. We're after passion. We're after intimacy. We're after connection. We're after relationships. We're after fulfillment in one form or another. And the thing about pornography is that it gives you momentary fulfillment, but there is actually much better fulfillment out there in the real world that is much more durable and is also guilt-free and shame-free. So with that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the very end. If you liked the episode, I would love it if you left me a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. You can also reach out to me by email. My email is in the email description of the episode notes. So thank you so much, and catch you on the next one.